This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, January 24th, 2013. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, slapstick poetry. Every now and again on this program, we ask a poet to pick a poem that's up on our website to read and discuss. Jennifer Michael Hecht is not only a poet, but also an historian. Her books include Doubt, A History, and Funny, which is her latest book of poems, and she has another one coming out this fall. She teaches poetry and philosophy at the New School in New York. Jennifer, the last time you were on this podcast, you gave a perfectly lucid explanation of the idea of order in Key West by Wallace Stevens, which I'm still grateful for.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
Now, when I asked you to pick a poem that sort of reflected your mood these days, you came back with two, and Death Shall Have No Dominion by Dylan Thomas and Chaplinesque by Hart Crane. And I was trying to think of what these poems might have in common. The only thing I could think of was that Hart Crane and Dylan Thomas both have this incredibly distinctive sonority about their poems.
That's for sure.
It's hard to find anyone whose poems sound better than theirs do.
Right. You have to go back to like Keats. Yeah.
So we opted to talk about Chaplinesque. Mm-hmm. But before we get there, I want to ask you a bit about Hart Crane. He's generally been considered one of the major American poets of the 20th century, but I can't help but notice that these days he's not talked about as much as he used to be. Am I right about that? And why do you think?
I think that's right. I'm not entirely sure why not. I think that his books are wonderful, but there aren't too many of his poems that get anthologized. He's not a poet whose individual poems are always as strong as Chaplinesque. The other poems are wonderful, but we do tend to read them in concert with each other. Hmm. And that might stop them from being anthologized as widely.
Yeah. So Chaplinesque, of course, refers to Charlie Chaplin, and I think mainly to Charlie Chaplin's little tramp character. Mm-hmm. What else do you think might be helpful to know before you read it?
Well, I guess we can say that they did meet Chaplin and Hart Crane.
Oh, really?
And they had a long conversation about poetry, which both of them reported about very briefly in letters. And we also know that Crane wrote this after seeing one of Chaplin's movies. There's a real intimacy to it. It's not just some cultural reference that's there. It's something intimate about the knowledge that he had of this man.
Well, we'll talk about it more a little bit later, but let's listen to it. Why don't you read Chaplinesque by Hart Crane?
We make our meek adjustments, contented with such random consolations as the wind deposits in slithered and too ample pockets. For we can still love the world who find a famished kitten on the step and no recesses for it from the fury of the street or warm, torn elbow coverts. We will sidestep and to the final smirk dally the doom of that inevitable thumb that slowly chafes its puckered index toward us, facing the dull squint with what innocence and what surprise. And yet these fine collapses are not lies, more than the pirouettes of any pliant cane. Our obsequies are, in a way, no enterprise. We can evade you and all else but the heart. What blame to us if the heart live on? The game enforces smirks, but we have seen the moon in lonely alleys make a grail of laughter of an empty ash can, and through all sound of gaiety and quest have heard a kitten in the wilderness.
Now, as a cat lover, I can't help but love a poem that ends with a kitten in the wilderness.
I've actually always fought against the kitten. I've come around to it.
It pushes the edge of sentimentality.
It's really
like
does.
Awe. It really pushes it about.
It's just that since that's the point of the poem, that what blame to us if the heart lives on? What does that mean other than, if you really were walking out in the street one night and you were cold and dejected and you actually found a kitten, who wouldn't feel that they were somehow chosen to find it, that there was something special in that experience? It's true, the heart lives on.
Mm.
And so,
in spite of the difficulties.
But I used to wish it was, give me, make it a possum, do something.
Well, maybe that accounts for part of this poem's popularity. It's not hard to sell a kitten. Let's go through this poem a little bit more in depth. It begins We make our meek adjustments contented with such random consolations as the wind deposits in slithered and too ample pockets. Mm-hmm. Now, that evokes Charlie Chaplin with the big pockets right. that he'd wear in his costume. But we make our meek adjustments. This suggests that things are tough.
Yeah, that things are very tough and that in general, we don't make these bold will-based decisions to change the world. We make our meek adjustments.
Mm-hmm. And what does he say? In slithered and too ample pockets.
That's one of the brilliant moments of this poem, that word slithered there. Of course, it is a real word, but the way he uses it makes it into a sort of made-up word,
yeah.
Where it really seems to be describing sort of used grimy cloth.
Yeah, or the action of putting your right. hands in your pocket and the sound that it makes.
Right.
And then the poem goes on, for we can still love the world who find a famished kitten on the step, and no recesses for it from the fury of the street or warm, torn elbow coverts. Now, that's very easy to understand. The idea of rescuing a kitten from the harsh city streets.
It is, though. It's not really clear what he means by warm, torn elbow coverts.
Coverts suggest a hidden space.
Maybe, very much. Maybe
inside next to his skin.
Right. It seems like it at first, but how would you hold a kitten in on the inside of your coat?
Oh, you could do that. You can put him down.
Tuck it into it. Yeah, it was a large-sleeved coat.
Yeah, sure. And then the poem goes on, we will sidestep and to the final smirk dally the doom of that inevitable thumb that slowly chafes its puckered index toward us, facing the dull squint with what innocence and what surprise. Now, this to me suggests the Charlie Chaplin encounter with the police officer.
Right. I think that that's definitely what he means, and it's the primary meaning of it. But I think that the whole thing can also be read as a kind of metaphor for death.
Yeah, this is when death enters the poem, right?
Yeah, and that inevitable thumb is not just the image of someone jerking their own hand and telling you to get out. It's also this giant thumb coming down from the sky to squish us out of existence.
Oh, no. But here's what's confusing about that. When he says, the doom of that inevitable thumb that slowly chafes its puckered index toward us. What do you make of that?
It's just a strange way to use the word, but it's pointing.
And one can imagine him facing the dull squint of the police officer with what innocence and what surprise. It's another thing entirely to imagine facing death with that kind of innocence and surprise. It suggests a kind of heroism there.
Yeah, I guess heroism, but also all of us know that that's the end in store, but we do face it with a sort of innocence as if it's not going to happen, and surprise when we're confronted with death, someone else's or the prospect of our own. Yeah, that dull squint. The whole thing is so moving, partially because of what you pointed out, the slowly chafes its puckered index. All those words are strange. The idea that it chafes in its movement, that mm-hmm. it's a puckered index. You know, when you really take those words slowly, they're very strange, and that's wherein lies the poetry, the mystery that comes in those conflations.
Every line of Harcrane often has that effect, is that it makes you stop and say, what is he saying there with the yeah. strange word choices that he throws in?
Yeah, but that whole stanza is amazingly vivid anyway. That sidestep, you can just sort of see this little skip that we make. Just, you know, we're not going to try to push something out of our way. We're going to sidestep. It's just, again, a kind of meek adjustment. Mm. And all we're trying to do is dally the doom, to slow down the doom of that inevitable thumb. We're not trying to stop it. And also that word smirk is important there. What the smirk is
it a smirk on the face of the dead person, or
I think the smirk is the poet in terms of our cynicism. It's also on the cop.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of smiling that he's catching us on our own eventual smirk when we're faced with the worst, and we still manage to have this sort of wry meta-consciousness of what's going on. It does a lot of work there.
Mm. And then the poem goes on. And yet these fine collapses are not lies, more than the pirouettes of any pliant cane. Collapses, he's, I guess, referring to Charlie Chaplin pratfalls of mm-hmm. falling down. And then when he would get up, he would toss his cane around his arm, kind mm-hmm. of casually, as if nothing had happened. And then he goes on, our obsequies are, in a way, no enterprise. It's a very unusual use of the word obsequies.
Obsequies means funereal, funeral rites. I think the way he uses the word enterprise is just as weird. I think that's the hardest line in the poem. I've thought a lot about it, and I think that we're supposed to read it sort of like These fine collapses are not lies. So he's saying, you know, the way we actually fail, that's not a lie either. Hmm. The sentence sort of reads, you know, this failing is not a lie any more than our dancing is. But these funeral rites we keep enacting, we're not tricking anything. Both are true.
This is when maybe the idea of poetry comes in. Our obsequies are, in a way, no enterprise. Maybe he is, as you suggested earlier, bringing in the idea of poetry.
Yeah, I think the whole poem can be read as being about poets and about how we try to tell the truth about how hard life is, but at the same time to find the sweetness in it. Yeah, I think he is speaking to the way art, either Chaplin's art or the poet's art, is both about finding the honey and also realizing and speaking to the bruises as well.
And then he goes on, "We can evade you and all else but the heart. What blame to us if the heart live on?" Suddenly it's about you. Where does that you come in?
Yeah, I think he's talking directly to death.
Yeah, well, it makes sense, right?
On the surface, he's sort of talking to the cop. We can evade you. Mm-hmm. But he's talking to death, but he's also talking to the cynic. We can evade you and all else. So we can evade some of the hardship. And all else but the heart. He's really saying that we're always subject to this way that we feel most human, where we sympathize and empathize, and that what blame to us if the heart live on, it's a statement. It doesn't have a question mark at the end of it. It has a period. Hmm. And it's just sort of saying, you know, there is no blame to us if the heart live on, if you're still talking about kittens even after the Second World War, you know. what blame to us if the heart live on? That's how it seems to work.
Mm, we're going to feel no matter what.
Right. We're going to keep feeling.
And then the final stanza, "The game enforces smirks, but we have seen the moon in lonely alleys make a grail of laughter of an empty ash can." Yeah, a grail of laughter and an empty ash can. I don't know what that reminds me of, but it seems to have a very vivid image.
Yeah, it is such an extraordinarily vivid image. I think it evokes a kind of urban naturalism, the sort of natural beauty of even a really rough urban scene.
Mm-hmm. And the game enforces smirks, it begins. What does that mean? The game of life?
Yeah,
enforces
the game of life,
smirks.
But also the game of art. Both are going to make us want to be cynical and want to deny empathy and deny the kitten.
Hmm.
But we're constantly struck by beauty. It's crazy to be seduced by beauty in a world this terrible, but we are. She's showing how much art can make, because it's not really the moon that makes a grail of laughter of an empty ash can. It's a poetry that makes of the moon in a lonely alley a grail of laughter in an empty ash can, which is an amazing accomplishment. And then, "And through all sound of gaiety and quest," it's worth lingering over that.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking through a city street and you hear other people partying, the gaiety and the quest. You're surrounded by other people's accomplishments and all the sense of struggles for achievement. And he's saying, through all that, we have this experience where we have empathy for something beautiful.
Now that we've picked the poem apart, I'm wondering if I can get you to read it again.
Sure. "We make our meek adjustments, contented with such random consolations as the wind deposits in slithered and too ample pockets. For we can still love the world who find a famished kitten on the step and no recesses for it from the fury of the street or warm, torn elbow coverts. We will sidestep and to the final smirk dally the doom of that inevitable thumb that slowly chafes its puckered index toward us, facing the dull squint with what innocence and what surprise. And yet these fine collapses are not lies, more than the pirouettes of any pliant cane. Our obsequies are, in a way, no enterprise. We can evade you and all else but the heart. What blame to us if the heart live on? The game enforces smirks, but we have seen the moon in lonely alleys make a grail of laughter of an empty ash can, and through all sound of gaiety and quest have heard a kitten in the wilderness."
Jennifer Michael Hecht, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jennifer Michael Hecht is coming out with two books this fall. One is a collection of poems called Who Said, published by Copper Canyon Press, and the other is Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It. And that's coming out from Yale. You can read a few of her poems on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also find Chaplin-esque and thousands of other poems. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.